This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 199 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. This week's episode is sponsored by Blue Apron.
So, as we say when we talk about Blue Apron, not all ingredients are created equal. When I get my Blue Apron meals in a box, I know I'm getting fresh, high-quality ingredients. Now, out of their upcoming ones that we see, I am looking forward to getting one of my vegetarian meals, specifically spiced zucchini enchiladas. I cannot wait. It looks so delicious.
Whereas the carnivore in me is looking forward to the peach honey glazed chicken with mashed sweet potatoes, collard greens, and Thai basil. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/outlander.
You will see if you go to their website that they have a great variety each week. You'll choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or you can let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you will never get bored.
You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait.
That's blueapron.com/outlander.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
We are thrilled to have here with us today on the Outlander podcast some of the cast and production team of the new short film 1745. And that is Mario Akande, writer, actor, who plays Rebecca, Moyo Akande, who plays Emma, Clive Russell, who plays Master David Andrews,
and Ali Mitchell, co-producer and costume designer. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
To dive right in, describe a little bit each of you about your background and training.
Okay, who's gonna start first?
Well, I'll go first because I had no training. I was a teacher at a college of education in England, and the guys in the year above me did a thesis about opening a theatre, which was actually opened 18 months later in Bolton in Lancashire, and I went up to work there. So that was my training. All my work has been my training. I never had any formal training.
Just on the job training, which is just as important.
It's the best. Mm-hmm. The absolute best.
It is. It's real. Fascinating.
Okay, and this is Moyo. Moyo and Mariah sound a little similar, so I'll say this is Moyo. My background actually starts in musical theatre, the world of musical theatre, believe it or not. Acting's always sort of been my first love, but found out along the lines that I could hold a tune and I didn't have two left feet. So I decided to tie as many strings to my bow and started off in dance classes when I was a child, drama classes, did a lot of amateur dramatic shows, and then followed on, went to a specialist school in Scotland. So you would basically do your hires, A-levels, and also study performing arts at the same time. So that was at the Knightswood Secondary School, which was fantastic, 2 years there. And it was only when I was there that I realised that, oh, actually I can do performing as a full-time career. So I decided to further my training and I relocated down to London and did a three-year musical theatre course and graduated with an honours degree at the Arts Educational Schools. So, but now I've gone down the street acting route. So that was my training background.
And this is Mariah. I started out kind of doing the same thing as well. I'd go to like amateur drama classes and things like that with Moyo as well. And I really always wanted to do film and TV. So I went to and applied to a school in America called Idlewild Arts Academy. So I went in there for about 2 years and then I came back and studied in London at a school called East 15 Acting School. And from there, I just really kind of got into the writing side of things as well. I mean, I've always written since I was like a little kid, and I felt like, well, I'm going to try my hand at doing my own thing. And that's how 1745 came about.
And it's so interesting to hear these things about each other as well, yeah, about how everybody got started. This is Ali speaking. I went to art school, Edinburgh College of Art, and studied costume design, which is how I got into doing what I do. I've been learning on the job since. That was about 20 years ago. So I've been working in film and television for that time.
But you're also a producer this time.
Also a producer. My first experience in that role, co-producing on this film.
How did you step into that? Was that like a fluke? Was it something you'd have had an interest in?
Well, it was really something very special about this project, about this story, about Mariah and Moyo together, and the story that they wanted to tell. And also my husband, David Brown, little Outlander link here, he is the UK producer on Outlander. So we together, we at Larson Films, we decided to, you know, come on board and support the project.
Fantastic. And yes, There's a funny thing in the Outlander universe. It's like Outlander is everywhere.
Yeah.
somehow it's always involved in something.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what was the? And this is for everyone, but of course especially Mariah and Moyo. But anyone, we want to hear from all of you. What was the inspiration for 1745?
Okay. This is Mariah. Well, for me, I like love period drama, so I've always wanted to be in something that was period. So I thought, oh, well, I might as well try and write my own thing. So I started researching like Scotland's history, and I started understanding that Scotland was like heavily involved in the slave trade. And then I discovered newspaper advertisements for runaway slaves. So there would be ads that detailed like saying something like, young boy run away to the Highlands, was wearing fine clothing. They would give a reward as well for anyone who'd found him. So I thought, this is crazy. There were runaway slaves in Scotland. Black people lived in Scotland at this time. And I just felt like it would be really important to share this story because no one had ever heard of it. I hadn't even heard of it, and it wasn't something you learned at school. And that's just kind of where I took off and started writing the story.
Yeah, it's sort of an invisible history.
Yeah. And this is Moyo here. Yeah, so it was Mariah's discoveries of these advertisements that she found at the back of local Scottish newspapers that inspired me to actually get involved and come on board and help her develop the script. But here in Scotland, I mean, certainly in my time at school, this wasn't taught in our Scottish curriculum. So this is a part of history for me that I wasn't even aware of. And being a black Scottish woman and being proud to have been raised here, that was astonishing.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be a great idea to explore this relationship between two women within the story. That was the most exciting part for me, and that's what inspired me.
Definitely, and having a sister as well. Like, we're both actors. I wanted to write something for us together and something that was really empowering as well. So, that was how it all came about for us.
My involvement was as a result of a phone call from Ali, who sold me the production in quite a short time. And she's kind of underplaying her passion for this project and also how persuasive she was. And I was there was a little video made of that when they were looking for locations, and I filmed various parts of it. And I, too, had no idea about this. I think Scots people largely have a sense of themselves as being part of a country with a very fine history for libertarian politics, for socialist politics, for the great enlightenment of the 18th century, and so on. And so suddenly realised that we were involved in some of the darker aspects of the history of the world. It wasn't a shock particularly, because we have a very rigid class system and so on. But it certainly was, it made the whole thing seem very intriguing to me. And to talk about empowerment, these three women have done a fantastic job in getting this from nowhere onto a screen. And I saw it on the big screen last night for the first time, and it's a complete knockout.
Why 1745 exactly? Could the story have been just told just as effectively if it were pre-1745 or perhaps post?
Well, it could have been told as effectively, but we chose 1745 because it was a big part of Scotland's history with the Jacobite Rebellion, and we felt like it was important to show other people who were fighting for their freedom as well, because there are advertisements around that time as well, but we just don't hear about it. So we felt like it would be really, like, putting that... I mean, that was Moyle's idea, actually, the
title of the film, yeah, because... In Scotland, whenever you talk about 1745, everyone talks about, oh, well, the Jacobites rising and the rebellion and the injustices the Scottish faced against the Hanoverians. But nobody kind of discussed or spoke about, like what Moriah said, all the other people that were living there at the time and who were also fighting for their freedom. So we thought 1745 was the best sort of title for that.
Kind of, it's a genius year to bring in, because absolutely the tie-in with freedom, that Scottish freedom... period, full stop. And also, but it doesn't go, it goes beyond, as you said, the Jacobites, and also is a little provocative there.
Definitely
called 1745, and then you see what comes on the screen, it's gonna challenge a lot of people probably in their knowledge.
Challenges what people already think they know about that time. And that certainly for me, when I read the script, I just that really was complete knockout, because you do, there's so many associations as a Scot, you know, with your knowledge of history, you know, when you think about 1745. And this was something, you know, that I personally had didn't know about and hadn't considered. And when, you know, Mariah's research, those newspaper adverts, one of the those adverts was Dalkeith, little town outside Edinburgh, a runaway 18-year-old girl called Anne, and it describes, you know, in detail what she's wearing and, you know, the reward that will be offered for her. And the date is 1729. So, you know, really, that was just so shocking. And, you know, then starting to think about that and think about those circumstances and realising how involved... I think we know a lot about Scotland's involvement, proud involvement in the abolitionist movement, you know, later on in the 18th century. And but the actual involvement of... and the economics of the country and how that was tied into trade, plantation trade, sugar, tobacco... and, you know, and the slave trade money coming back in a cycle into Scotland was just, it's just such a huge area to explore, and there's a lot more work, you know, moving forward. I think Mariah might be able to speak a bit more about that before she wants to take the idea.
Yeah, because obviously with the short, we're just exploring a small section of it. But, yeah, like I was saying, there is a lot more to it as well, and understanding as well how people could have been taken from Africa or places like Nigeria, we've based it for this story, and how did they end up in Scotland? No one really looks at that, because when you think of slavery, you're always thinking of, like, plantations in America. But what we don't think is obviously those plantations were owned by a lot of Scottish merchants.
And that also brings in this, you know, in terms of, like, Master Andrew's character in this story, the inherent contradiction within society, because, you know, these people were brought back to Scotland in a kind of prized, you know, sort of prized status, you know, sort of status symbol, really.
Yeah, that's true, because... What was different was, because in America you have people working in plantations, but in Scotland they would be living in the merchants' houses as servants behind closed doors. But when they were out in public, they would be dressed up in very elaborate clothing as a kind of a flaunting their wealth and power.
Status symbol.
Yeah.
It's an interesting juxtaposition. The Scottish slave owners who are, I would assume, going to fight for their freedom from the English while still subjugating their slaves. You know, the two different classes fighting for their own freedom.
Yeah, I mean, it would just depend, because you would have people in Scotland who were on the English side as well, and some who were the Jacobites. So
I think there was quite a division in the in the aristocracy about whether to take the English shilling, as it were, and carry on with their lives, or whether to challenge the whole thing. It's kind of inferred, somebody at the film yesterday asked the question about the white flower, which is a sign of the Jacobins, and that appeared. So it might be that my character in fact was a Jacobite. I think it's unresolved, but it's certainly part of that, and the hanging man and whatever are part of the historical background, part of the background of that movement.
part of the interest that with this discussion, I'm remembering in the film, the master David Andrews, when he is reminding the girls, when he catches up with them and he reminds them, I saved you. I mean, he's still their master, but he's like, I saved you. When your old people did this to you, I saved you. So he's got this dual track in his mind of, I mean, he knows he's their master and he will show it. But at the same time, he's also their savior. And so that's an interesting dichotomy with him as well.
Well, I think in the research, it's perfectly clear there were people like Master Andrews who were, if you like, wholly paternalistic in the nicest sense of that word, as at the same time being slave owners, actually requiring the person to work for, be their property. And there's the added dimension here, obviously, that there's a sexual abuse going on, which he clearly thinks at some level is about love. So he's looking after, as it were, his children. He's being kind to them, and he feels able to sleep with them. It's all very complicated, and I think that's a clever, a much better way of doing it, rather than him being a nasty old brute.
Yeah.
I mean, because it reflects the reality of that situation.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real story of that as well.
Joseph Knight.
Yeah, so there's quite a well-known story of a runaway slave in Scotland called Joseph Knight, and he had a relationship with his slave master as well.
Wedderburn,
yeah. But, I mean, we don't know the exact specifics of it, but when he ran away, he wrote a book about him, wondering, like, where was he, and he'd done everything to find him as well. So you have that complexity. You can really tell that it wasn't a simple relationship. There was something more going on there.
It's a very interesting story, the Joseph Knight story, because he actually, this is, if I remember correctly, I think it's in the 1760s.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, 40, 45 years ahead of abolition, Joseph Knight took his case to the Scottish court, and the Scottish court ruled in his favour. They ruled that you couldn't enslave another man, and that the laws from the West Indies did not apply in Scotland, and therefore he was free. And his master, Wedderburn, was, you know, from the accounts at the time, actually devastated, because he felt himself to love this boy. He didn't recognise the conditions that he lived in as being ones of slavery. He considered that he had given him education and, you know, and so felt, you know, a kind of sense of betrayal. And it's interesting, even the fact that the Scottish court, you know, could rule, which tells you the contradiction in society, you know, that the laws that are there cannot be upheld here because we have different laws, and yet the people can go from here and, you know, partake and benefit, you know, and so very, 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 very dark times.
Yeah. I mean, Master Andrews points that out to one of the girls when he says, if you were in America, I could take your ear off. The implication being that in here he couldn't, and how lucky they were to be
here and
under his care,
if
you like.
They should be grateful.
Yeah, it was like a privilege. They were privileged in some way in his eyes. Mm-hmm. But they don't see it that way, obviously, because there wouldn't have been so many runaway slaves if it was that great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is that there's a lot more to be investigated, lots more research to be done, moving ahead with a view to the feature film.
Yes.
you know.
Yeah. Because, there's a lot that we haven't discovered yet, and people are still researching it, so they're actively finding more information about runaway slaves. But the thing we really want to know is what happened to people after they ran away, because even with the Joseph Knight case, although he did win his freedom in the court case, he still ran
away. History loses track of him after then, so
that's
you
it.
Don't know how his life panned out. Mm. You know, having achieved something incredible, you know, this young man who was not free taking his case to court and winning, we don't know what happened.
Nothing.
Well, and that's kind of what I was left with at the end of the short. I was like, now what? Where are they going to go? Where are they going to hide? I'm like, in a country of very, very light-skinned people.
Yeah, kind of stick it like a sore thumb, don't you? One of the challenges, I suppose, back then.
Oh, it's interesting. I think somebody, possibly one of the professors that you were speaking with, I think somebody was talking about the fact that those once they were free and outside, you know, the people integrated into communities and were accepted, and
I guess it just depended, like, on the circumstances of how they ran away as well, because someone like, say, Anne, who ran away because she has a collar, mm-hmm. and she's like, people know who her master is, like, how would she get that off? So if she ran away, she'd be like brought back, and we kind of suspected that she did get taken, like recaptured and brought back. So that kind of happened to a lot of people, and they would just remain with that household, and they would live out their years until they had died. Mm-hmm. Some would return to America, some would return to the West Indies if their master decided to leave Scotland. So that was kind of the fate for the ones that we have records of. But for the ones that ran away and never got recaptured, we just don't know. So, I mean, yeah, they could have been reintegrated into society again in other, like, towns and things, and maybe they changed their name or something, mm-hmm. Or got recaptured by another person, but...
This is a really interesting area to start researching completely. And, you know, team up with some other people that are doing research in that area as well.
Yeah. And they're still searching, aren't they, the historians that we worked
with? Yeah,
they are. And I'm sure one day we will find something concrete and a record out there somewhere.
Because there must be descendants and families and, you know, that there is a history that can be followed.
If they know, that's another thing too, because like sometimes they could have been descendants, but everyone in the family now is white, and they wouldn't even dream that they had ancestors who were of like African descent. That's another thing that happens, but just have to keep searching.
You mentioned the metal collar that Emma was wearing. Why was it that only she had one and Rebecca did not?
Well, back then, if you were a high flight risk to your master, they would normally engrave a collar out of silver or brass, and they would have the master's name engraved on that collar, so that if that slave ever ran away, they would be easily identified, or if they'd ran away before, this is when the collar would come into place as a sign of the master saying, you are my property, this is where you belong, and if you ever try and leave my house, you will be found, kind of thing. It was a sort of control aspect as well, and Emma within the short film wears one because, again, Master Andrews sees her as a high flight risk.
Yeah, I think part of the, you know, in terms of the relationship between the sisters, the elder sister, Emma, has been protecting her younger sister and, you know, is more... knowing, more present,
Emma, and
therefore a flight risk. You know, whereas the younger sister is still, I want to say, compliant.
Yeah,
if that's
because like their backstories that, well, they were brought over when they were much younger as well. So you have Rebecca, who was brought over as an infant. She was maybe she was two. So she doesn't have any memories of her past. So everything in the present right now is just what her life is, and. Emma was brought over when she was older, so she kind of has that memory still of home, and she's aware that their circumstances aren't right and they shouldn't be there.
Yes, that's your normality.
Yes,
your
normality.
How did Creative Scotland, BFI, and Scottish Film Talent Network become involved?
Well, the Scottish Film Talent Network, they have a scheme where they fund projects for first-time people who are making short films. So what we done was we put an application in with the idea of a story, and we went through how many weeks was it? I don't remember.
I think it was about...
Because it was a development stage as well.
6 month development stage, wasn't it?
So they'd selected like 13, like overall there were over like 1,000 applicants, and then they would select 13 to 14 projects that were then put through like a 6 week development stage. And then we would represent our projects and pitch it to the Scottish Film Talent Network. And then they decided to select only 5 projects for funding. Mm-hmm. So they commissioned 5 of the projects. And we were one of the lucky projects that were selected.
Yeah.
And the Scottish Film Talent Network is part of BFI and Creative Scotland. So that's how we were all kind of...
Okay. Talk about the not literally, but a lottery. That, what a fantastic journey. And to have... What odds? Oh, my goodness.
It was just great because it was the first time Mariah and I had actually collaborated together professionally. We both share the same passion in film as well, so the whole process has just been fantastic, really, and a really special one to be able to get the story out there. So it was great to have, you know, Creative Scotland and SFTN backing us up, because this story is coming from a new perspective. You know, it's coming from... a different kind of generation, and it was just really nice to tackle the subject matters involved within the story. It's very fulfilling.
Yes.
Okay, now a few slightly more specific questions to the film. Was there any significance to the name Sheriff Donald MacLeod on that letter?
Oh, in the letter that Master Andrews received when he comes down the stairs.
Yes.
Significant in what way? What do you mean?
Is it just any name chosen? Is it a historical figure? Does it mean anything?
I think the important part of it is the word sheriff. And in other words, he's that letter is presumably saying get a group of people together to help me, which might explain perhaps what happens at the end of the movie had the movie gone on another day, as it were.
I think from memory, some research was done on that, and I think that may have been the sheriff in a particular area at that time.
I think it was Gordon, the director, he decided on that.
Yeah.
So...
But we can't tell you any more than
that.
We don't know.
I know that there was very specific questions.
Maybe.
Moving on.
What does Emma call Rebecca from the water when she's trying to get her to jump in, but she rides off with their master?
She calls her Ronki, which is actually Rebecca's real African name. When slaves were brought over to the UK, they were given British names. So that's why she says Ronki.
And what was the tune that Emma was humming to Rebecca as she braided her hair?
It was the song that my mother used to sing to us when we were younger back in Africa. Emma obviously remembers this because she was a lot older when she came over to Scotland. At the time.
Yeah.
And actually, originally, it's a Yoruba poem of reincarnation because so in the Yoruba faith, we believe that everyone is reincarnated. So it's a poem talking about how you should respect life, even like the small mouse is important and significant, and you shouldn't, when someone dies, you should always respect their body and pass them on with respect. So
it's not just an African song. Obviously that would have that makes perfect sense being sung, being hum, and it wasn't a lullaby necessarily. It was a specific song with a specific message.
Yeah. Wow.
And I love it when it goes deep. Costume. Okay, Allie and whoever was involved in this, what determined the color blue for Emma and red for Rebecca?
I think that we got to a place where we had a real sort of bit of Union Jack going on there.
Yeah.
A bit of red. Yeah, and the blue also it relates to the Yoruba traditional textile crafts and the use of indigo, which is something that in the flashback sequence where we've got the mother and a young Rebecca and Emma in Africa, that they're wearing a dire cloth, and this is the traditional cloth that's been made for many, many hundreds of years, possibly even a thousand years.
It's a
very old technique.
Yeah.
Using indigo in a kind of, it's a resist dye technique, so tying or painting on with a sort of a starch paste, you know, so you get that pattern. So the blue is very much a part of Yoruba culture, and we wanted to have that, and have that kind of clarity between the two of them as well, the blue and the red.
Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that, because she's the one who still has those memories, isn't
it? Yeah, of course.
She carries, if you will, they each carry the DNA and the literal history of their homeland, but Emma carries more of the cultural knowledge, more of the psyche of her homeland in her memory.
Yeah.
So where was 1745 predominantly filmed? It was Scotland's gorgeous, so that's like, just stop right there. But it was gorgeous, the cinematography, everything. How did you decide where to go and where was it?
Well, it was mainly filmed in Glencoe, I'd say.
Glencoe, Glen Etive.
And Glen Nevis.
Yeah.
We even had Aberlady as well in Edinburgh.
Africa was
the beach.
Beach.
So Africa and Scotland are not too dissimilar.
Yeah, very similar landscapes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the I think in the film the cave location,
yeah,
we've got those shots of the rocks with all the wet and the hanging mist, mm-hmm, drifting through. That's Glen Nevis,
yeah,
and the more open landscape with the mountain in the distance and the mountain that features in the bog sequence. That's in Glen Etive. Mm-hmm. Bucolettive Moor.
Yeah, we were spoiled for choice, really, yeah, weren't we? And I think we filmed, was it Braveheart and Harry Potter?
Yeah.
In Glencoe, I do believe.
Yeah, Glencoe.
It is incredibly dramatic scenery.
Stunning.
I mean,
it was freezing, though, because we filmed in the winter, smartly.
Yes. We did have wetsuits, though.
Yeah, underneath, underneath those costumes. What you can't see is that underneath all those, well, hopefully you can't see it, underneath all those, fine clothes, there was, you know, polyurethane and neoprene. And
lots of padding.
Other than the adrenaline that's obviously running in her system, after Rebecca hits Master David Andrews over the head and he sails away.
Drifts away.
Beautiful drifting scene.
One take wonder, yes.
Flowing down the
river. And you see Emma standing there kind of shaking. Obviously it's adrenaline, but is that also cold?
It's a bit of everything.
It's cold.
Filmed, the interesting thing was when you're out there in the middle of the Highlands, in the wet, in the cold, in the costume, the lines are blurred, especially because I was working with my sister. So a lot of that, it was hard to differentiate between reality and pretend.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
stage.
I was really involved, and I think your whole body, with the adrenaline running through it, it just all takes over, and you just immerse yourself fully into that situation. Mm. So I think it was a bit of both, really. A bit of the cold and a bit of just being there and living that moment.
Especially that bog scene.
Oh, that was cold.
The bog scene was very
my favourite part of it. Oh.
Looks great.
That was brave.
That was a scary one, wasn't it? Yeah. That wasn't an easy day for the pair of us.
You kept going back to that, didn't you?
Yeah, we loved it so much.
In doing a little bit of research, I saw your was able to view your videos on Indiegogo. Tell us a little bit about your Indiegogo campaign and how that helps you guys get funded and go forward.
Well, so we put together a video. So we'd done a recce and we thought it would be really great if we could raise more funds to get more of what we wanted out of the production, higher production value.
Well, what we realised was that it was going to cost a lot more money to do it than the money that we had.
Yeah. So that's why we done it. But it was good as well because it got us to like raise a lot more awareness of the film as well, and we kind of got it out there to people and everyone was really supportive. So
And we had a lot of support from the Outlander team as well, with the Indiegogo, and I know that Gary, the production designer, tweeted about it.
And Diana Gabaldon.
And Anita, who designed the hair and makeup on this, she takes care of Kat in Outlander, and so there was a lot of support, and that helped to spread the word. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how people came together, so many people, and contributed what they could, made it possible.
And the Indiegogo campaign is still actually running. We're launching a new campaign at the moment.
We are.
Yes. Because now the film is complete, we are now entering festivals and getting the film finally out there, so that will be relaunching soon, so watch this space.
So we need more money.
Outlander fans, watch this space.
Yeah.
We will absolutely continue to help spread the word as much as we possibly can.
Thank you.
Oh, of course. And I kind of got a hint of the answer in what you just said, but for our listeners who are like, oh my gosh, when can I see it? When do you think this might be available for a wider viewing audience?
After the 31st of May, the Edinburgh International Film Festival will be announcing its programme, and 1745 has been selected for that. So it is going to be screening in the film festival.
Yeah.
We're in the process of entering it into, you know, into different film festivals. What we need to do is what we're desperate to do is get it into some festivals in North America so that people can see it there. Mm-hmm. You know, we had so much support from Outlander fans and from people that are interested in the story there. So we want to get it. We want to export it.
The goal is obviously to get it in more, to get it seen in more and more film festivals, and to widen its reach. At which point, maybe after film festival season, or in addition to, at which point might it be coming to the wider public, or is that not really typical with shorts?
I don't see why this type of short couldn't go out. Yeah. You know, couldn't go out there. That, I mean, our plan, we've got big plans for this film.
Yeah, we're
think universally it would reach a lot of people, and I think a lot of people would connect with the core story. So I think our goal, our strategy anyway, is just to hit.
It would be great to be able to get it on television, you know, internationally, so that people can access it. I think that the way the process works with short films is that you do the film festival circuit first, when it's new. Into the cinema that way, and then from there springboard onto wider release and hopefully television sales, global sales, short film, and then the feature film.
So, okay, you've teased us, before we let you go, you've teased us, I have to ask you this, because I, like Summer, we watched it separately, and then I talked to Summer, and I was like, but it ended. So where is the story going? There has to be more, and you've hinted at it. So I know you can't give it away, but what are your plans, your big pie-in-the-sky plans for the story of Emma and Rebecca?
Oh, I can't give those away. But it's not finished, and it will be continuing, so, because we're definitely working on developing the film, so you will have more, and all those questions will be answered, but... at this stage, I can't think anything yet. So
it's exciting. Okay, but you are. But it is in the works. That's great.
Yeah, definitely.
So, if someone wants to find out more about 1745 and all of you guys, or contact you, what's the best way to find out more about 1745?
They can reach us on www.1745film.com. Yep. And there's going to be a lot of information put up there, some pictures, some stills, some information about the story, about the amazing cast and crew who helped bring this story to the big screen. I mean, everything's going to be on there. Yeah. Indiegogo campaign, press, things
social
related
media
to
well.
Yeah, social media and everything else. So
I mean, we also have Twitter, so we're at 1745 movie on Twitter. And on Instagram as well, we're at 1745 movie. And we also have a Facebook page as well. So if you just search 1745, a short film, we're also on that as well.
And you also have an IMDb page, I saw.
Yes, we do.
Wow.
That would be great.
This is very impressive.
1745.
I'm impressed
everywhere.
By it.
We're everywhere. It's easy to find.
We're gonna share every possible way of linking to it. We're gonna share with that. So for each of you, briefly, what are some of your upcoming projects, if you can share those?
Well, currently I have a film that will be premiering this autumn, I believe, feature film called Category 5, which was directed by Rob Cohen. He's an American director. He worked on Fast and the Furious, Triple X, films like that. And I'm excited. I'm playing a supporting leading role. So that's due for a worldwide release.
Or a leading supporting role.
Yes, leading the supporting role.
And it's a bit of an action.
It's an action thriller movie. It's about a gang of thieves. I play one of the thieves who try and hack into a US Treasury facility and steal $600 million. But at the same time, there is a Category 5 hurricane coming into the town. So the entire town's evacuated. They think they can get in, steal the money, and leave. But obviously.
Don't give anything
unpleasant
away.
Things happen along the way. So it's got guns, it's got hurricanes, it's got wind and rain and action and thriller. And yeah, so that's going to be an interesting one. So I've got that coming up soon.
I'm working on the 1745 film. So that's me.
I'm walking my 16-year-old dog who is waiting for me outside. Aww. I'm also working on a BBC series called Relic, which is killer backwards, because it's a 6 1-hour one-hour films about a serial killer, which starts at the end and goes to the beginning. And I can't tell you how difficult it is to read. And I'm also doing a comedy with the Peep Show guys. You may not be familiar. Written by the guy.
Oh, fantastic.
Written by one of the writers of Veep. There's a lot of sign language going on here. I don't know where.
Auditioned for that.
Yeah. What, my part?
Yeah. Yeah, we look so alike. Yeah.
And of course, moving forward with developing the script for 1745 for the movie. That's the next step.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, this may be a silly question, but as it develops, would all four of you stay involved in telling that larger story?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm not playing because yeah. Sean Connery's name is now attached to my part.
No, everyone's going to be still involved. All four of us.
Excellent. Okay, so we have how to find out more about 1745. We have all the social media and website information. What about each of you individually? Would you like to share your personal Twitter or website, Twitter accounts or websites, so we can get all of this information out there and people can follow you on your journey?
Well, speaking for myself, I don't have any of those things, so that's not a problem.
Me neither. You're incognito.
Yeah. Oh, we're... I'm on Twitter and social media as well, so it's at MariahAcandy on Twitter, and my website's MariahAcandy.com, so people can get me on that.
I'm the same. I'm on Twitter. I'm at MoyoAcandy, and I have my own website. You can find me on www.moyo-acandy.com, I believe.
So you'll never get on that one.
No, that dash.
But hopefully, you know, the website is going to be a hub.
Yeah, yes. So
we'll be connection there to everything else.
Well, great. This has been amazing hearing from you guys about this just really unique. I honestly can say, and I'm not 20, but I'm also not 80, but I'm kind of in the middle there. But in all of my years of all the stuff I've seen, I don't know that I've seen something that has been shocking and challenging in such a way, just because of my own ignorance of a certain time period. And I found it so inspiring in that I want to know what happens and or what happened. So I think this will attract a lot of people, and it's a story that needs to be told, as you guys have said.
Oh, fantastic.
Thank you. I find it really inspiring that these two women, as sisters, as Black Scottish women, have been able to do this. Had the drive to do it, the ambition and the creativity to do it. So really, that in itself is a pretty remarkable story.
Pulled really, everybody into it, yeah. With their energy and passion.
Yeah. There's a really special feel about doing it. I mean, it was difficult to do and all of that, but people were really engaged with it in a way that's it's a hallmark of it being about something.
Thank you. Thank you both, Ali.
That means you want to be in the film.
Yeah.
What are you saying? I want Sean Connery in there.
Yeah, no.
And just, I was just going to say just a huge thank you to you guys and out there to all the Outlander fans as well for their generosity and support. And just thanks very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. It's been really overwhelming, isn't it? The support and helping us along this journey. Wouldn't have been able to do it without you guys as well. So thanks for having us today.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And as the life of 1745 grows, as the film, when you get to your next spot along the journey, we would love to have you back anytime, all of you, any of you, to talk about the next steps of the story of Emma and Rebecca.
Brilliant.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
So thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.